The old model is, let's get out on site as quick as we can, try and sell them something they probably don't want, disappear, send a quote, send them the quote, and then spend, you know, the next 6 months trying to follow them up on that. People don't have the time for this. It's garbage. So the new way and the way that works is...
The ideas that we talk about in this episode today are really only as good as your ability to implement them. If you're a growth-minded contractor who wants to systemize faster, our content, our coaches, and our community has you covered. Book a call with our team today in the link in the description.
You're listening to Contractor Evolution, the podcast by Breakthrough Academy, where we systemize contracting businesses for growth. Keep listening to learn how the world's top contractors scale their companies, build killer teams, and make more while working less.
Matt Jones, welcome to the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for coming.
You made it all the way from Australia.
All the way.
You flew across the planet just to hang out with me, right?
Just for this.
Just for this.
Exclusive. I feel like I'm kind of part of this. I feel like there's been a few conversations in the early days there, which sort of led to this whole outcome, which is cool.
Not everybody knows this, but me and Matt did a podcast, I don't even know, 9 years ago, 10 years ago.
It's a long way back.
We did a few more since then. We've stayed in touch. And then when we launched our podcast, we asked you for a lot of help, and you delivered in a big way. Mm. Not only did you give us lots of insight, you also gave us a podcast coach that actually worked with us for a lot of years.
That's right, actually. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's great to be here. It's an awesome little studio you got.
You're the reason. You're the only reason for all this. This is just, you can take all the credit. It's fine. No, but I'm stoked to have you. So prepping for this, you run a marketing agency. There is a lot that you understand about marketing. You've been doing this for how long now?
13 years.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but my background formerly was as a plumber.
Yeah.
So I sort of came out of that, pardon the pun, in the trenches. And I've probably spent more time, I was working this out the other day, actually. I think I've spent more time now in agency than I have in the trade. Oh, it's on par pretty much. So yeah, it's been a long time, but yeah, it's been a journey. That's for sure.
Yeah, and you've got a good perspective of both what the contracting space requires and what marketing requires. And you merge the two to make what you do every day.
That was kind of the idea from the beginning, I suppose, just to really have a, like, understand the fundamentals of how those trade businesses run and how that relates back into, like, you hear it all the time with, you know, the reason that I started the agency, truthfully, was because there were so many, horror stories of people that were working with agencies that just didn't really understand the running of a trade business.
I think everybody feels that. I think there's very few and far between people who actually deliver. I call marketing kind of like snake oil sales a lot of the time, because people don't understand the black box that is behind it. And some people are great and some people aren't, but you can't tell.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's probably the same for a lot of any business, truthfully. You just hear more about it with agencies, but it's an important part of the dynamic. You know, you really got to understand, okay, well, what are the moving parts of this business? And then, I mean, more importantly, I suppose, and the reason, we like working with coaches and stuff as well with you guys, because as businesses grow and evolve, their overall strategy has to evolve with it, you know. And we're going to unpack a lot of this stuff today, what we've learned with, you know, with the clients that we work with. But essentially, that has to be an evolution.
There you go. A contractor evolution.
I was working that in. God.
Let's talk about this, because I'm even working on this in our team. And I know when I talk to a lot of you, our members, I don't think that people fully understand what a marketing strategy actually is. I think there's so many different definitions of it. And can we just start by defining it? What is a marketing strategy? What is it not?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess at the end of the day, and this is the realization that we have, A lot of our clients, when they come to us, they're coming out of that space where they're heavily dependent at that point on things like word of mouth, referrals, which, as you know, is the best lead you'll ever get, but you can't scale it. And so when they have the conversation, they're like, right, we've been sitting here stagnant, you know, at this turnover point for the last 3, 4, 5 years. What are we going to do to grow the business and actually increase our revenue? At that point, they need to have a serious look at, okay, well, what are we doing from a marketing point of view? How are we going to generate more leads? So, excuse me. At that stage, they sort of need to be exposed to these ideas and these conversations around, well, if you want the outcome, you're going to kind of got to do the thing. And that thing often is strategy. They've never had a marketing strategy because they've never really needed one. They've always just been dependent on referrals and, you know. And
just what comes to you.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's never really been... like part of, and through no fault of their own either, by the way. Like, it's not like it, and I always say to these guys, listen, it's what's got you here is got you here. But like, for what you're telling me in this strategy, what's important to you, these are the things we need to do that. So when you say, what is the strategy? It's essentially understanding what are the goalposts. Like, what are we actually shooting for? And truth be told, when we have that conversation with a lot of businesses, they'll pull out these ridiculous numbers in terms of what we want to be turning
over. We want to 10X our growth.
Exactly. And I say, okay, well, that's fine. We can do that. But this is what we need to, you need to understand has to happen in order for that to become a reality. And as you've experienced, you know, we're just chatting offline, like what gets you to a 1 million business is not going to get you to a 5. What get you to a 5 is not going to get you to a 10. What get you to a 10 is not going to get you to a 50. You know, like there's these things that need to change structurally, which are not obvious. And the obvious things are the things you get off platform. It's like, well, we just spend more money and, you know, whatever. But like, that's not really what's important in the greater scheme of things. Like, you need to understand, okay, well, if we're going to double our revenue next year, if we're going to add 50% of our revenue next year, then, you know, these are the things that we need to consider in terms of fulfillment. So staff, team, delivery, you know, all that kind of stuff, as well as some of the more obvious things like, well, we need to spend money. And that's probably one of the biggest things is like businesses just don't, and again, through no fault of their own, because they never had to, they just don't spend the money they need to get to the place they want to get to.
Yeah, getting the leads is one thing, but then taking in the leads properly, sorting through who's actually worth it, being able to sell properly, price properly, making sure that operationally you can handle those things, making sure that invoicing and billing and cash flow is all right. In check. And so is strategy that big, or do we want to go into marketing strategy? Because when you're saying that, I'm just thinking strategic planning right away.
Sure. Well, I mean, we only really deal with marketing and sales around the marketing space, right? So that's kind of what we handball all the rest of it to coaches like you guys for that kind of thing. But at the end of the day, regardless, like if somebody's saying, okay, well, we want to, you know, increase our revenue by 50% or whatever it might be, then they need to understand that, well, we need to figure out, well, is your current team going to can you deliver on that? Like, is that going to cause constraints? In most of the cases it is. And again, depending on the size of the business, you know, maybe you've got like a, you know, team that's not at capacity, that's fine, but they will reach capacity at some point. And if you're running ads pretty damn quick,
yeah,
like it happens pretty fast.
And so how do you make sure it's a good strategy? How do you make sure that it's aligned with the company's values, so it aligns with the company's mission and what they want to go do? What do you need to understand about a business to make sure that we're setting up a good strategy for an organization?
Yeah, I mean, you need to unpack all of that in the early days, because again, that sort of ties into what are the goalposts here? Like, what are we shooting towards, and what is important to you, you know, the business? Look, in most cases, the businesses tend to think the answer to all their problems is more leads.
Yeah.
But I can tell you without question, that's pretty much it's never the case. Truthfully, in some cases, they have enough leads. They just have a horrible system of managing leads.
So let's get into this a little bit. What do you mean by that? So if I need 100 leads to, you know, fulfill my next month's requirement, is that too many? Is that too little? How do I determine that?
Again, and that's why very common conversation. Like, people say, well, we need this many leads to deliver this many jobs. Yeah. Then we have a look at their system and the way they're managing the leads, and we just see holes everywhere. So if we're going to take like a renovation business or a roofing business or something along those lines, right? When you look at, okay, where are the holes in this business's bucket within their existing sales process? Now, I'll give you a prime example. So we have a client, back home that does, we have a lot of solar clients, and they were doing about $1 million a month in turnover. So decent sized business for Australia. And they had this process where, and they were incentivizing essentially their CSRs to book their field guys out into site visits. Like, that was the KPI. So it's like, well, the more site visits you can get us into, the more jobs we're going to win. And I was sitting down with the director and I'm like, this, you're incentivizing the wrong thing. It's not about how many site visits you can get to, it's how many jobs you can close. And so we flip that on its head. And when you look at the holes in the system, it's like, well, the biggest problem that you guys have right now is your discovery is shocking. Because essentially the CSRs are like, oh yeah, you want solar? Yeah, cool, we'll send someone out. It's like, what? So we need to really dial down on the different stages of the process. And so typically we see discovery as being the most important part of the sales process, because as important as it is to qualify the leads, you also want to disqualify
Right.
And truth be told, you want to disqualify more than you qualify.
I think about this. There's everybody knows this concept of like ideal customer profile, right? I also think about who's not your customer and how do you screen for that? Do most companies know this coming in with you? Like, who's our ideal client? Do you have to work through that with them? Do you start to define who their client isn't? Like, how do you start to have that screening process be effective? How do you know where to point that arrow?
Most people think, oh, well, my ideal client is someone that, you know, when you hear people say, oh, we do premium work. Yeah. Like, it's a complete wank. You can't promote that. Like, you can't say to a client, oh, sorry, are you a premium client or are you a just a D-grade tie kicker? Which one are you? Like, you can't say that. So there's this like, I don't know, it's kind of like rainbows and unicorns in the sense of you can't really attract you can to a degree, and I'll explain how you can attract the right type of customer in a minute, but primarily you want to just make sure that when that lead does come in, that you're asking the right questions which can give you an idea of if they are the right type of customer for you. And most of those questions are in line with, first of all, can you service that location? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're in a big city like Vancouver or, you know, Sydney or, you know, whatever. Like, you don't want to get called for a tap washer over here and then have to drive 3 hours across the city to do another tap washer, right? Like, yep. That's insane. So can you service that lead? Do they have the budget?
Yep.
Like, that's an important one. And a lot of business owners think, or businesses, they think that it's, like, that's a conversation that you should have on site. It's like, well, we'll get out there and then we'll find out.
But now our hours are all tied up with that sales rep out there.
Right.
And it may or may not be effective.
And you drive 2 hours to get to this job and they've got like 50% of the budget they need to do the work they're asking you to do, you know? Like, there's no problem in addressing those conversations up front. It's one of the reasons why we really like the whole flat rate model as well within an interactive space is quite good, because it sort of helps people, like, you got to give them an idea, you know? If we're working with businesses that do projects, which we do a lot of, roofers, you know, renovations, solar, that kind of thing, like, tell them what it's going to cost in discovery. Tell them what it's going to cost them. And if they have the budget for it, then book in a site visit. But don't get out there and then have them reject you on price once you've got out there because you're too expensive. Like, that's insane.
Yeah, it's less of like a hard sales process. It's more of a discovery process between you and the customer to make sure between the two of you, you're a good fit. But as a company, you have to lead that. The customer 100%. Is going to lead that.
And I think that's part of the, like, there's so, I mean, you've probably been to a lot of these, you know, I've been to all of these, you know, sales programs over the years where they're like, you get out there and you sell. And totally. You're like, give me a break. Like, I just feel like that day's done, you know, like, it's just about adding value. And again, like, what you want to essentially be doing, and I know we're going to unpack this further, is you want to be able to make sure that within, like, when you're bringing a client on, that you're bringing a client on for life. You know, you're bringing someone on that's going to call you back to do another job there. You don't want to be ripping people off on their first round and then go to the next lead. So, you know, in the industry, we call that LTV or lifetime value. And it's really important, because it's one thing that I suppose a lot of business owners, they don't, I mean, truth be told, it's more conducive to certain verticals. You know, if you've got like a plumbing business or electrical business or, you know, say lawn care or whatever it might be, which is sort of conducive to recurring work, then, you know, you're crazy not to put the focus on LTV. And essentially what that does is it takes the the emphasis off that acquisition cost up front, and it sort of zooms out a bit on what that overall value is worth to you as the business.
Yeah, like, there might be situations where you're losing money on that first project just because you know it gets you in the door. I see a lot of people, like in roofing, they'll do roofing services at a very low margin, and then they'll come in and have a commercial client that they can utilize and work with for many, many years.
Maybe, yeah. Probably more prominent in, say, the you know, like residential, like maintenance and things like that. Where, I mean, I know this was my background, like, it's coming out as a plumber. Like, we would sometimes, and we would call this a loss leader, we would spend more money to acquire that customer than we would on the job itself. So say the lead was costing us, I don't know, $400 for that. Well, that client was costing us $400 or $500 and the job was say $400. So you're essentially losing money to do the job. But if you have a good process in the back end and in with lifetime value approach, then that we know that lead, that customer should be worth 5, 10, 15, 20 grand to you over the course of the next 10, 15 years. So it's a different perspective.
And I've been working on this myself, but to do this properly, you need to have connected your financial software to your CRM or project management software, because you need to be able to see where lead sources are coming, what's actually selling. And then beyond like the initial contract, you need to see all the invoices that have come in over time.
Yeah. I mean, look, the technology is kind of the background, but truthfully, it's the technology is not the thing that makes the difference. It's the paradigm that makes the difference. And so like when we're talking to businesses, it's like, yeah, you need to have the tech set up. Like that's a no brainer, but like you need to understand what we're talking about here because this is not a churn and burn conversation. We're not interested in more. We're interested in better, longer. Right. So once people sort of understand that concept, it's like, oh, okay. So yes, you know, and this is, you know, whenever we're running ad campaigns for businesses, we periodically will not run ad campaigns for clients that we have not set up with like our Tradie Hub CRM. Because otherwise it's churn and burn. And more importantly, what happens 99.999% of the time, and you would have probably experienced this or at least heard of these stories before where somebody's like, oh yeah, they ran ads for us and their leads were
Yeah, I hear that all the time.
Well, hang on a second. Like there's nothing wrong with your leads. Your process is and here's the software with the full record of the communications and the contact attempts to prove it. Like you've called this person once.
Right.
You know,
like it might just come in through an email or an Excel sheet. They kind of go through it and then it gets lost and
normally always an email and it comes in and they're like, oh yeah, we called them, but they didn't answer. But like what people need to understand is like, again, depending on the vertical and depending on how urgent it is, like if it's a reactive, then often there's lower touch points involved because like, hey, there's sewer surcharging in my, you know, bathroom. I need someone out here like now, as opposed to like a project, which is more, I've got a bit more time to think about this. It's not urgent. But importantly, we need to understand the, if somebody, for example, sees one of your ads on the phone on the way to work or on the train on the way to work, and they click on the ad and they go, oh, that looks good. Make it all inquire here. We are interested in a bathroom renovation. And they get to work, the phone rings, they can't answer it because they're at work. Most people give up there. Like there's a process. Like you need to actually, like, and this is-
I see this with our members a lot too. If they don't have a sales process, it's usually like an ego thing where they're like, oh, they must not want to be told. I don't want to bug them. And they stop because they don't have a process that they don't know what to do next. They just feel like they're bugging them.
Exactly. And it's ridiculous. Like they've come to you because you have the answer to a problem that they're looking for and you are not delivering on your side of that conversation. And the technology cuts through all of that. And it's not like, well, yes, we kind of deploy the technology in a selfish way because we want to make sure that we can dispel that argument off the bat. But also, like, we need to equip the business with the right system so that they can get the maximum value out of the contact. And I'm not saying lead because I'm not saying client either. They're not even a client at that point. It's just a lead. So we, to the point where we will now actually, we put people in businesses that manage the leads for them because we know that if we don't, they're not going to do it.
What is a good follow-up process to determine if this is a worthwhile endeavor to go after? Because am I contacting this person for 6 months, for 3 months? Am I doing 12 contacts, two? You know what I mean? Like what is a good example of?
Well, okay. So we'd break that down into different like time frames, right? So initially, like we will call leads on behalf of clients twice a day over the course of 7 to 10 business days. And we'll try 2 or 3 times each attempt. So it's something, we're somewhere in the vicinity of 30 to 40 contact attempts.
Oh, wow.
If they've made an inquiry.
Okay. So it's two times a day, every day for 7 days, 7 to 10 days.
It's 2 times a day, but it's two to three attempts on each of those. Okay. Like if they don't answer, we'll call them again. Like, and people think, oh, that's really pestering. I'm like, well, hang on, you've paid for this lead. Do you want us to not contact them?
Yeah, that is an intensity level that I think a lot of people listening to right now are like, right.
Yeah, right. And here's the other thing, right? Truth be told, like this is not time best spent for the business owner. Like time best spent for the business owner is out on site closing jobs or like dealing with team and whatever it might be, right? So like it does take a lot of resource and not everyone has dedicated team that they can say, okay, this is your job now. I want you just to put this level of attention in. So we give people these processes, but like truthfully, it's sometimes a conversation around, well, like we can do this probably for a fraction of the price and twice as good, but if you want to put someone in the seat to do it, go ahead. Anyway, whatever it is, right? But the point is like just – that most people don't give it that level of attention. And interestingly, like out of these, you know, constant attempts, the majority of the discovery calls get booked in after the 10th.
Near the end.
Not near the end, but like.
Sorry. Not the 10th day, the 10th attempt.
10th attempt, okay. Yeah. So say day four or five, because people just get busy. And we pretty much never ever hear somebody pick up and go, will you just stop calling me?
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conversation.
Is it just calls? Is it calls, emails, and texts?
Anything. It doesn't matter.
So it's
inquiries.
Points. Yeah, inquiries.
Oh, no. We're calling them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phone calls.
Yeah. And then, so then after that, if they don't book into a discovery call, then we will stop the calls and then we'll just put them into nurture sequences.
And then they can come back when they're ready. And then they go from, like, how we do it in our system is we'll have, like, what we call a QSO, a qualified sales opportunity, that's inquired and asked to be contacted. And if we don't get in touch with them or realize they're not looking for something now, we'll put them into what's called an MQL, a marketing qualified lead.
Yep.
And then marketing will nurture that lead over time. But we never get rid of it.
Yeah, that's right. And it normally goes the other way around. You don't have a lead. You have MQL, then you have SQL. So an MQL would be somebody that's like, okay, well, they've downloaded our document, they've booked a sales call or marketing call or whatever it might be. Maybe they didn't show up, maybe they did, whatever. And if they did show up for discovery, then we go, right, now you're an SQL.
Yeah.
So now you're a sales qualified lead. But yeah, anyway, whatever. The point is, and this is really important for the listeners and the viewers to understand. If for whatever reason, that individual is not ready to book that job with you right there and then, it doesn't mean that they are a bad lead. It just means that at that point in time, that opportunity is not right for them. Mm-hmm. They may and will come back, provided you can showcase expertise and position yourself as the expert, leveraging things like content. And this is where you guys out there have such a opportunity and truthfully kind of an obligation to, you know, plant that flag as the go-to expert within that space by being useful, relevant, frequent, you know, like send them information. Like they've come to you because they're after a bathroom renovation. Send them some shit about bathroom renovations. It's not that hard, you know, and the technology will back and support all of that. So most, but again, it's a process and it's part of a moving piece that a lot of businesses don't have.
And I just want to back up before we get into this expert piece. So what we've just talked about is, hey, know who your ideal customer is. Know what they're about, know what they care about. We didn't get into how to market to them. We might want to talk about that a little bit, but like, how do you target that person? But most importantly, how do you vet for that person in your screening process? Know your actual lifetime value of that person so that you can start to target, hey, these people make us whatever, $7,000 over the course of their lifetime with us. These people make us $22,000. Now we can actually spend more on the right client versus waste money on the wrong person. And if we are spending a lot of money up front, we can see the long-term trajectory to see if it's actually worth it. We might lose money on the first job because it's $400 to get the lead, mm-hmm. but it was worth it for the long term. Is that what we've gone through so far? Is there anything I'm missing?
Pretty well, yeah.
Okay. One thing I want to ask in this is, how do we actually understand client acquisition cost in this? Is it just the cost of the lead? Is it the cost of the salesperson going after that person 40 times?
Yeah.
How do we pit lifetime value against client acquisition cost? What are the costs associated?
So when we're like, from a marketing perspective, the from an agency perspective, I should say, the number that we can control as an agency is called return on ad spend.
Okay.
Like, ROAS. Or ROAS, right? So that is, okay, well, how much money did we spend on the platform to get this job over the line? And that's a pure number because there's nothing that sort of that can blur the lines with that. When we start talking about things like ROI, that's where you'd be like, okay, well, maybe we do want to incorporate into the acquisition cost our salesperson or our campaign management or our telephone bills or our lights, our office, like operational related things, right? So that's kind of something that we just say to the business, well, we can unpack this as we go, but let's just try and work on ROAS as a raw number, and then we can work on ROI by building in these other things that is out of our control, but still important for the general, you know, the knowledge of the business.
Is there a typical ROAS that you see, like a multiplier? Like, I need to see 5 times my dollars spent to dollars booked. Like, what's the, is it vary by gross profit margin, by industry, I would imagine?
Yeah, it's more vary by industry.
Yeah. Could you give us some examples of just like what you would see for a roofing company, for a painting company, for a construction company?
Sure. I mean, like it's pretty insane. And most of the listeners and viewers will call on it, but like let's take solar, for example. Like, especially back home at the moment, we've got these rebates and all this kind of stuff. Like, it's not uncommon to be exceeding 2,000% ROAS.
2,000?
Yeah.
So I'm spending a few dollars to get a lead.
It's crazy.
Interesting.
But this is like a testament as well. And this is one of the reasons why we like to sort of work with projects, because like the ticket item is high, right? So, you know, you can win a bathroom renovation, you know, project every week, And the return on it is big. Yeah, of course, you've got, then you need to unpack the operational expenses tied into that. Okay, what about, what's that, like, and it's important to do that because, if you're just getting all glowy on the, you know, the rainbows and unicorns of pure ROAS, then you don't really have a full understanding of the cost, running cost of the business. But that's why they, you know, we encourage guys to work with coaches.
This is what we get into, yeah.
Exactly, right. Yeah. So, you know, it's important that, but like literally in the thousands of percent. And the, sometimes the bigger the project, you know, the bigger the return. But then you kind of got to zoom out on that as well, right? Because you might have some weeks where you crush it and other weeks where you don't. So it's not, you don't want to be super reactive with it. You kind of got to just have more perspective, like aggregate data.
Let me ask you about this, because the way you're talking about it, you almost make it sound too easy. Is the dream state for a business is to, I always call it like the lever to like turn up or turn down. So then you can control operations. You can strategically plan. We're going to do 5 million this year. We're going to have this many leads, do this many quotes, do this many jobs. We have this many people hired at this many hours they produce per week. You can actually mathematically work out the whole year. Mm. Is it truly possible to just, based on ad spend, have a lever just to pull up and down? Or does it start to break along the way and there's
it
things?
Breaks.
Yeah. So this is what I want to get into because it seems like the dream, but like.
Well, what I would challenge there, Danny, is the fact that you don't want to be in a scenario where, like the whole point of this conversation, the thing we have with clients is we're trying to build for them consistency.
Yeah.
And when you're constantly like, you know, dropping the hammer and then slamming the brakes, you're up and down. And that has a lot of ramifications. It screws up the algorithm. It screws up all of these different campaigns. Like it's a punish. So when we're designing strategies for clients, this is the reason why, like in defense to what you've just said then, we've learned this the hard way. Like we did that for a long time. And now we're like, no, this is what we're doing. We're going to build out your roadmap for 12 months and then we're going to scale towards it consistently, and we're not going to be doing this. We're not going to be dropping the hammer, slamming the brakes.
Yeah.
Because everything, you know, just turns into a
shit. We have too much work. We have not enough work. We have too much work. We have not enough work. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and you want to, and the whole point is you want to be able to be in scenarios where you can be like, okay, we can predict this growth. We know it if we keep going at this consistency, and we always use like a quarter of a year as a time block. Like, you know, a month is not enough. You want to be okay. Well, have we hit that target consistently for 3 months? And then it's like, okay, cool. Well, now we're not fluking this, right? Like it's pretty consistent. What's the next piece to get to the next stage? Do we need to bring another team member in? Do we need to bring another crew in? Do we need to, you know, up our ad budget? Like what do we need to do in order to get to that next part of the roadmap, right? So
how far ahead do you want to be seeing? Is it 3 or 4 months ahead? Because I feel like marketing, you do something now, 3 or 4 months from now is when you see the result. For operations and production, how far ahead do we want to be planning to make sure we keep that train track running so the train can keep moving?
Look, it's kind of, you've got to be agile enough to be able to make like decisions based on data when that time is relevant. But the point of the strategy is not to 100% nail it. And truth be told, you never will.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. Well, I suppose the good thing about that is though, as well, in most cases, like what I've seen in the past anyway, and ourselves included, when we create a strategy and we have a target, we normally hit it sooner. Which means things typically speed up, but you've also got to make sure that all the other stuff is speeding up with it. Team, fulfillment, redundancies, and all that kind of stuff, you know, built into the business. So when you're saying, okay, well, like, and this is the conversation, like it's not so much about, okay, we just need to scale up our marketing ad spend to get to the next stage. We need to scale up the business and the whole operation so that it can maintain consistency.
And how do you know when to pivot? When a strategy is working versus when it's not, and you need to make some pivots?
Well, and this is why data is important, because if you have the data, and a lot of businesses, like when they're coming to us, they don't. And this is why we say to them, well, we're not going to run any of these campaigns until we have the system deployed, because with the system, we can aggregate and we can collate data. And with data, we can make proper decisions. Like when you come on board in the first stage, it's going to be essentially like, this is what we see across the board that works for other businesses. Can I guarantee that's going to work for you? No. Is it likely to? Yes. Let's get it moving and find out. And one of those big conversations is, right, ad spend, right? You know, I had a conversation with a not yet client, you know, only a couple of days ago while I was over here. And same deal. I'm like, listen, if you want to go down this path, I'm not going to ask you what you need to spend. I'm going to tell you you need to spend this. And if you don't want to do that, then don't do it, but don't do this with us.
Yeah, you need to give them a high level of direction.
This is exactly what you need to do. And we're only going to know if we can up or down this spend after 30 days.
Right. And how do you know? What tells you? Like, is it the acquisition cost? Is it the ROAS? Is it the amount of revenue we've been booking? Is it?
It's truthfully like we have aggregate data from a lot of campaigns we're running. So we kind of know what's going to work for them. But for them specifically, it's always going to be about, well, how much money
am I getting out of how much I'm putting
correct.
In?
Correct. And when we're designing these roadmaps, it's very often the first part of the first point of the conversation is like, for example, some businesses will come to us and say, we want a new website. We go, cool. Why is that important to you? Well, you know, we just feel like we need to generate more leads. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, a website may be an important part of that conversation, but a website's not going to generate you more leads. Website's a conversion tool, not a lead generation tool. So if you want leads, we need to be talking about lead generation. So maybe the website is not the right thing we need to be deploying at this point in time. Maybe that's something we'll do 3, 4, 5 months down the track. Let's get some ads moving for you, get some work coming in, and then you have more budget to reallocate into other things like website or, you know, SEO and these kind of things. And this is, you know, one of the when we talk about the ecosystem of, you know, marketing, this is one of the things that sort of starts blurring the line between lead generation and branding.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because I feel like as a business owner, even myself, it's like, it is easy to get into this idea of just like, well, we need an ROI, right? It's just like, let's make sure there's an ROI in everything we do. And branding is one of those things that maybe it's a little more murky, but if it's all just lead gen, I feel like you destroy your brand. If it's all brand, I feel like you probably don't have a good engine to generate leads. How do you balance those two approaches?
So what I would say to you guys out there is like, first and foremost, what is the most important, what's going to move the needle right now in terms of getting you from closer to your target? Okay. So in most cases, it's probably not going to be brand recognition, truth be told. It's probably going to be lead generation, acquiring new clients. But what you need to consider as part of that ecosystem is when you're talking about like lifetime value, you are, and we've already spoken about the importance of like being seen as the go-to expert within that space. Essentially, like you can guarantee that when somebody is part of your marketing ecosystem, they're going to do some research. And research is typically Googling you, bringing up your website. And so there's like this ecosystem that comes into play there, which is very, very hard to track. Like even with technology, it's not super obvious.
But people are looking. They're using ChatGPT now too. So they're in LLMs researching all about you. And you can.
Yeah, and we can go into GEO in a little bit for sure, which is truthfully, it's like brought this breath of fresh air into like organic marketing, which I'm pumped about because I was on the hate fence for SEO for a long time. But now I'm back and I love it. But the thing is like people will research and you need to make sure that when they do research, they're stumbling across assets that are a true reflection of the caliber of business that you are and that you can do what you do, where you do it, who you do it for, and how you do it. They need to understand these dynamics before, you know, they come to you. So that's kind of more branding. In a perfect world scenario, you've got people that are coming to you, they've seen some of your content, they've visited your web pages, they've, you know, downloaded something or whatever it might be, they've read some of your case studies, and then they've contacted you because yeah. They're further qualified.
And we're seeing more of that in the market, aren't we? There's more intent now than there's ever been and less. What we're watching is just like there's less early clicks and there's more people coming right in at the end being like, I've actually looked into you. I'm ready to go.
Well, I mean, yeah, it would be the same, like the same question I would ask for you. Like if somebody's like been following your podcast for a while,
yeah,
like the amount of people that we get that have been following my podcast and they're like, oh yeah, I've just been listening to you for years and you know, now I'm ready to go ahead. So like that's a prime example of, like I suppose broader brand recognition and helping people understand, okay, well, you know, we're in this for the long haul. We know what we're talking about. We're sharing relevant, useful content. We're sharing case studies. We're sharing stories. You know, like this is the other thing. Like, I know I did this podcast with Benji a while back where we're talking about telling your story, you know, like content. And like it's such a great opportunity for you guys out there to really be doing that better in a way that positions you as the expert, showcases expertise. And so that when people do their research, they're like, ha, this guy does know his shit.
Yeah. So is it, what are the things that are my brand? Are they me? Are they my company? Is it a bit of both?
Like, well, it's definitely both.
Yeah.
And like gone are the days, you know, back when I started the marketing agency, you know, 13, 14 years ago, there was kind of this, people wanted to have this perspective where they're like, well, I want to be seen as a bigger company. So like, let's not put photos of the team on there and let's make us look more corporate, you know, have big buildings and all this kind of
stock photos.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it didn't take long where like now you even see some of these big corporate buildings, businesses, sorry, and they're all like going the other way. They're like, we want to be personal. So it's absolutely important that you guys do put a face to the business, and it's fine to put your team on the website as well. Excuse me. For example, if you're letting somebody into your home, or your wife is going to be letting someone into your home, wouldn't it be nice for you to be able to send them a team bio page of the technician that's coming out? You know, just to, like, it just makes sense. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question or not.
You are. I'm just unpacking the idea of brand, so it's not just a big concept with a nice logo in people's minds, right?
No, I mean, brand is, like, much bigger than that. It's your values. It's your, you know, your mission statement and all that kind of stuff that you guys do, right, as part of, like a coaching sort of conversation. But it's also something that you sort of live and breathe, and it needs to be that. And truthfully, like, your business is really a true reflection, well, up to a certain stage anyway, of certainly the owner and then the team involved, you know. And you need to tell that story, because you don't want to, when you're talking about like attracting the right customer, you want people that want to work with you. Like, you don't want to just—
aligned. Is there, they're easy to work with. They have aligned values.
Well, I mean, easy is kind of, I don't know.
They get more value, like, from you? Is it better?
Well, no, they just need to be the right type of person. Like, it's not about being easy. Like it's just about, okay, well, is this the type of person that we can do good work for, you know? So I think it's important, like, when you're designing the brand, like, you're just having conversations about the things that you do, so that people are like, well, that is kind of what I want. I resonate with that. That's cool. I want to be doing that. Like, they want that result, you know, they kind of get a feel for it. You can't do that through an ad.
Yeah. And would you recommend, I think everyone knows this at this day and age, but like, to be niching down into that ideal customer rather than broadening out. And when do you broaden out? Because some people do. Some people go by industry. They'll go by area. When do you know when to like niche down and just like be the best in your whole space at this one thing versus to broaden your marketplace?
Again, it's kind of specific, I suppose, to the business type. But when you're talking about marketing, it's a lot easier to position yourself as the go-to solar or say hot water expert than it is to be in Vancouver, than to be the expert plumber in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So so conceptually what that says is, well, and this is where lifetime value comes into play, because if you can get your foot in the door and plant the flag as the go-to hot water expert, it doesn't mean you can't do the other things. It just means you now have the opportunity to cross-sell, upsell, promote, and just basically let people know that you can do these other things. But you would never got your foot in the door if you weren't a hot water expert.
Yeah, because you're too broad. And so you just get caught in the noise.
And truthfully, like, when we talk about, you know, being picky with who you work with, it's kind of becomes a luxury of volume to a degree. Like, the more you have, the less you need to bring on, you know? Sometimes when you're starting out, you don't have that luxury. It's like, well, I just need to take this job because I need to feed my kids.
I think you also discover what your ideal customer is, what your best service is that makes you so unique, because you don't know
right
until you get into it enough.
That's exactly right. And momentum will drive decisions all the time. You know, it will, I say this to clients all the time, you know, like, let's just start with this, because we don't know where it's going to end up in 12 months. Like, we just need to see what direction it's going to take. And it will unpack itself inevitably.
So I'm just trying to put this all together in my mind to the original question we had been talking about, which is like, what is a marketing strategy? It incorporates your ideal customer, your brand, and who you are, both personally and between the organization, so that people, the ideal customer, can find you and understand you and do their research. And then involves a very clear understanding of what you're doing to get that to become a lead. So all the activities, and you do a lot of paid work, but like all the activities around that, including your website.
Well, I mean, not really. I mean, okay, and this is the thing, right? This is why the strategy is important, because the constraint might not always be leads. Mm-hmm. And we see that a lot. It's not always leads. And I think you've kind of got that like hardwired into your brain. I know. but truthfully, that might, like, where you guys are at in business, that probably is a pretty like an important thing, right? But like, sometimes it's not leads that businesses need. Like, sometimes they need a system, or sometimes they need like database reactivation. Sometimes they come to us, they've got like 10,000 people on their contact list and they've never once sent them an email.
Yeah. So that was the other piece I was going to get into. So then you want to look at, how do you take them through the discovery process to identify and make sure. And what you're saying in that is there's reactivation along in that process as well.
Well, you would always have that deployed before leads.
Yeah. Okay. Make sure you, yeah, which makes sense. It's like your lowest hanging fruit.
The system is the important thing, right? So once you get a lead, what are we actually, like, getting the lead's the easy part. It's like, what happens after you get the lead? That's the thing that moves the needle.
What is good performance, bad performance look like in a company so people can self-identify? Like, if I've got a database of past customers, what am I trying to achieve with that? How do I engage success?
Basically engagement. I mean, we are yet to run like a re-engagement campaign to a client's database that does not deliver work. How much work? Well, it depends. It depends on the vertical. It depends on where you're located. It depends on how old the list is. If you've got a list of 10,000 people and you've been building that over 20 years, you probably realistically got an active list of maybe 1,500.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes a hard pill for people to swallow, but like what you don't want to be doing is marketing to a dead database.
Right. I used to, I had a goal, and this was painting specifically, but I used to have 15% of my year's work was booked from my database, and I would be actively calling actually through it. We used to do previous customer list calling, previous lead calling, and previous estimate calling, and we'd have a different cadence for each one. And every year, my goal was to bring 15% of my overall work booked from that. Now, I wasn't a reoccurring business, so I only had, you know, painting every 5 years roughly, but that was like a goal that I had. Is that kind of like a good target for a business, or is that just arbitrary to a painting business?
Well, I mean, yeah, again, it depends on the vertical, but I guess the point is, like, to have a process in place, which you did, which maximize the likelihood of that lead becoming a customer yet again. So whatever that cadence looks like for your vertical, I mean, like, if you go and build someone a new home, chances are they're probably not going to need a new home built the next year, right? So there's different businesses are conducive to different stages. And on that point, different sales cycles. Like, the bigger the ticket item, typically the longer the sales cycle. Like, if you're marketing towards people that need new homes built, then your sales cycle is going to be very, very long for good reason.
Yeah, we see this with all the customers we work with. We call it kind of like low, medium, and at high average job size. And so it's a very different sales cycle, and it's a very different production process. And so low average job size is small, like, you know, lawn care, window cleaning,
right,
things of that sort. And so the sales process is usually done over the phone. It's usually pretty quick, and it's usually, you know, a larger team taking in a larger volume of leads coming in every single day. Mm-hmm. And then the routing is quite different, and the organization on the production side is quite different because you've got tons of jobs going on, multiple jobs per truck per day. The mid AJS is more like painting, landscaping, you know, roofing.
Renovations.
Can be. And it depends on the size, right? So if you're doing things like, I don't know, 5,000 to 50,000, you're kind of getting into that where you go and you give a quote, and there's like a whole process to pre-screen your customers so you don't waste a ton of time doing that quote. And then we've got our large average job size where it's, hey, these things are 6 months, sometimes in the making, sometimes longer with design and engineering and everything involved. And so it's the upfront screening is fairly important. And then the investment into that customer and the time you put often requires a deposit or some sort of pay for the work to even finish to get to the number.
Yeah.
And then the relationship building that happens along the way to secure yourself, as you said, the expert.
Yeah. And you touched on something there, which is really important. And you guys need to understand that at a certain point, you need to introduce some sort of payment for the ultimate qualifier.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When?
So for example, and I'll tell you the reason that this became like obvious to me. I was skiing with my buddy Dave one weekend, and he's a builder. He's a very successful builder. We were talking about how how much of a nightmare it is for him, because it could take him sometimes 2 weeks to prepare these like detailed quotes, yep, inverted commas. For you guys that are listening, I'm doing the inverted commas symbol. And then someone would come along and they would just basically take his quote and take 5% off it, win the job. And what I realized was he wasn't actually doing a quote, and it's sure as shit wasn't apples for apples when you're comparing quotes. So what he was essentially doing was building up this project analysis. And that led me down this path of like exploration where now we do this with clients where we're like, we need to make sure that you guys have some form of what we call a priority program, which is basically how can we take some form of a payment from a client at the early stage as a qualifier to make sure they're serious enough to proceed with the next stages. Now, to give you an example of what that looks like, if it's say you're a bathroom renovation expert, you might do like your priority program might be called, you know, Danny's 3D render service or something like that. This is the first part of our process. It costs you $400. We have to go through this stage before we go to the next. We'll deduct this amount off the cost of your initial invoice, but this is the next stage. Do you want to do that? And if they don't, then they're sure as shit not going to spend 30 grand with you on a bathroom renovation.
Yeah. I see this even, so right now I'm getting my roof done and it's not that they pre-screened me before they gave me a quote. I mean, it's a free quote. They went and did the thing, but I can tell right now I'm not in their schedule until I send the money.
Correct.
So they're not plugging it up with exactly.
And this is the point, right? Like they're not actually doing you a service.
Yeah.
Like it would be better. I mean, I would much rather say to someone here, I'll give you $500. Just get me booked in. Like the thing, like, so we'll circle back to this conversation and just remind me if I forget, because I probably will. But like the old model is, okay, let's get out on site as quick as we can, try and sell them something they probably don't want. Do the job, don't do the job, disappear, send a quote, right? For a day or 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, yeah. Who knows?
Yeah.
No process. Send them the quote and then spend, you know, the next 6 months trying to follow them up on that. Like people don't have the time for this. It's garbage. So the new way and the way that works is do discovery properly so you make sure before you even get to site that you can do what they want, they have the money, and they fall within the time frame that you can deliver it on. Great. Get out there. Then basically while you're there, present some form of a priority program where you can actually take a payment to get them to the next stage of whatever that stage might be.
And at that point, that qualifier is pretty high.
You've qualified. They've put money down. So, and they need to understand in discovery that you're going to be doing this. Like when Danny comes out to site, he's going to go and do his 20-point electrical checklist just to make sure that the integrity of, you know, your switchboard is fine, you know, so on and so forth. And then he's going to bring up his calendar and show you what the availability is for install. And then he's going to present you with our priority program, which basically gets you to schedule that in. And it costs $500, but don't worry, you get it back on your first invoice. But we just do that so we can give you the priority that you deserve.
I used to call that conditional closing. So I would basically be in the discovery call, finish with something like, hey, Mrs. Smith, awesome chatting with you. So I'll come out, I'll give you a quote. I'm going to go through the different products we can be using. And is everything comes in as far as price, as far as what you guys can afford, and as far as our services, what you're looking for? Is there anything else that you guys would need to make sure we can book the job in that day?
Exactly. Is there any reason why you wouldn't want to proceed with scheduling that job when we come out if all these things align?
They say yes, they say no. What I find is it doesn't matter actually that much. It just gets the idea in their brain and it allows them to think about it. And especially if it's a husband-wife team making a decision, they're talking about it before I'm coming.
Yes.
So there's an actual conversation properly happening so that when I am actually asking, I'm not putting them on the spot.
And the thing that you can do to strengthen that, and you should do, is between the time that you have that discovery call and the time that you're going out to site, you'll be sending them the information that you've spoken about and what's coming up next. And this is part of the process, right? So as we already discussed, and here's the recording of our call where you agree that the price is fine and the time frame's fine, and you're both going to be there on site when we come out so we can get this job scheduled if everything ticks the boxes. So you're holding them accountable to what they've said. Otherwise, like, oh, no, I just need to go speak to my wife. You're like, no, hang on. You said your wife's going to be there. And then the day before, you're like, are you both going to be able to be there still tomorrow when Danny comes out? Like, keep them accountable to it. Because otherwise they'll just spin it off with smokescreen bull excuses, you know? But importantly, when I come out, these are the things that's going to happen, and send them that stuff so they know what's going to happen. And if they're going to cancel that appointment, fantastic. Cancel it and don't waste our time.
These are all the things that matter more than getting a lead, eh?
Correct.
That's good. Not a lot of marketers care about these things, right?
Well, because I don't like to position myself as a marketer, right? We're about conversion. Like our whole thing is what's going to close more jobs. And very rarely is it the lead.
Mm-hmm.
Like the lead is an important part of it. And I'm not even going to bother going into like designing ads or that kind of shit, because truthfully, it's that irrelevant in the great bigger picture. It's the process that moves the needle. And the process is something as well. I'm sorry, guys. It's like showering. You have to keep doing it. It's an evolution. You know, it's always changing. There's always levers that you can pull through different stages of a sales process, which can improve an output.
Like the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, the Arnold Schwarzenegger 1% improvement, you know, sort of thing, right? So, like, there's always things you can do there to make it work better.
Is there a warning sign from, like, let's say you're pumping leads into a business and you're seeing conversion rates?
Go straight back to leads, yeah.
Sorry, I just grew up in this world. If I'm looking at, like, hey, I've got 100 leads coming in and we've made 10 sales, is that, as a person working with a client, and let's say I run a painting company, because I know every industry is a little different, right? I'm running a painting business, you're helping me, you've generated me 100 leads, I've generated 10 sales from that. Are you giving me warning signs saying this is really bad, or are you saying this is acceptable?
What vertical, for painting?
Painting, let's talk painting, just because I understand every industry is different.
What platform are we marketing on?
Facebook ads.
What location are they in?
British Columbia.
How old's the business? How many staff have they got?
Okay.
Like, this is the point, right? Okay.
You can't give me specifics because it's a law of what variables that
exactly. There's so many variables that are not in your control. And this is why the data is so important, because you need to get it moving to figure out what those numbers look like. But I can tell you now, like, when we're running, say, Facebook ads for, like, a let's say a roofing business, we would expect out of 100 leads, 50% of them would be disqualified, like, pretty much up front.
Okay.
And then out of the 50 that are remaining, we would be expecting that maybe, I'm just trying to think these numbers now. It's something like 5 of those would turn into jobs. 4 to 5 of those would turn into jobs.
Yeah. So about 10% of the qualified people that we actually have a conversation with.
Yeah. But you can, and this is the other problem as well. Like, when you see businesses that have come out of, like, a word of mouth and referral sort of model, and they're moving into the nasty snake pit of cold, hard traffic, that rejection and that, like,
it hurts.
Well, they don't understand, right? They don't understand that this is just the game, right? Like, 50% of these leads you're getting through Meta are going to be
Yeah.
That's the game. Yeah. Just you deal, if you're not happy with that.
But Matt, my referrals, they all call me back right away.
Exactly right. Yeah. And they always will. So go and get more referrals. See how that goes for you. Like, so don't get me wrong. There's definitely process you can deploy to improve referrals, but I'm just saying it's typically a very hard thing to scale.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, there's variables there that you just need to navigate, and, like, you need to be comfortable. And it's important that you understand that dynamic before you sort of pull the trigger on it. Otherwise, you're going to be disappointed. And this is the other reason why we'll often put people in the business to manage those leads, because then they don't have to be upset about it. They just look at the end result. Oh, site visit booked.
Let's wrap some of this up. I think on my end, just, we've talked about a lot. If out of everything we've talked about, everyone who's listening right now, what is, like, one or two just kind of, like, key things to remember or to just kind of solidify that you just wish your clients came in knowing or understanding more to have more success with this type of process?
I think, like, it's important for you guys to understand if you are interested in scaling the business in terms of, like growth, because scale doesn't always mean growth, right?
No.
Like, yeah. Like, and I'll give you a prime example. Like, we were to, you know, get a bathroom renovation client on back home, and their ideal of scale was, we want to be doing less 30 grand bathrooms and more 50. Their ideal of scale is doing less.
Right. Less jobs, larger jobs, easier to manage,
bigger
actually.
Ticket, right? Yeah. Again, like, kind of a luxury of volume to a degree, you know, like being able to pick and choose those. But, like, knowing your numbers, we were like, well, we know we can just, we don't, I mean, that's the perfect scenario, right? Well, let's do less work and get paid more.
Yeah. I always ask people, do you want to build a sequoia or do you want to build a bonsai tree?
Yeah.
No matter what, we're going to build something.
Yeah.
But it matters to know where we're going with it.
Yes. And truth be told, sometimes you just need to get things moving before that can become a reality, and that can kind of evolve over time, and it often does. However, just for you guys out there, if this is something that you do want to do and you're like, okay, well, we are kind of stale and we are kind of dependent on word of mouth and referrals and whatever it might be, if we go down this path where we need to be spending money to acquire new conversations, then we need to be comfortable with the idea that there are dynamics that we are not going to be used to. And those dynamics are, you're going to be having conversations with people that are disqualified. You're going to be more of, they're not going to know you. They're not going to like you. They're not going to trust you. They don't know any, they think you're going to try and rip them off, all this kind of stuff. And you have this opportunity and this obligation to kind of overcome some of these things. Are you prepared to do those things? Statistically, probably not.
Yeah. Especially if you've never done it before.
Truth be told, like, yeah. how many people do you know that stand, like, contractors, do you know that just say, oh, I'm just not very comfortable on camera? I'm like, I don't give a shit if you're comfortable on camera. You just told me you want this outcome. Do the thing. You'll get used to it. And the irony is, like, they will sit there, and I've seen this over and over again, where I've been with clients out on site, like, just filming or something, and they'll be talking to their customers like we're talking right now, with complete conviction, and they're just telling them exactly what they need to do, exactly what's going to happen, exactly what it's going to cost, all this kind of stuff. And you hold a little phone up in front of their face and they turn into the little schoolgirls and clam up.
One thing I always told my franchisees, because they would often clam up from rejection. I used to work with tons of franchises in the painting world, is look, if that's eating you alive, you might not want to worry so much about booking the job or not booking the job. You might just want to worry about understanding why you're booking the job or not booking the job. And that's your whole goal. It's just like, let's have a conversation. And if we can figure out that, you know, there's something here to talk more about, awesome. If not, all good. But if I can't figure out why, then I haven't done my job. And it's kind of like the first step to starting down that process. Because if you're like, oh, they want to book. Oh, they don't want to book. Oh, they want to talk to me. They don't want to talk to me. I'm like, I don't care. Can you figure out why they communicated with you in the first place? Yeah. Just figure out why. That's your goal.
Well, I mean, look, that is why discovery is so important. So going back to like the one thing that, you know, you could do, first of all, just be comfortable with the process and be comfortable with the fact that whatever you're doing right now within your business, as effective as it has been, it will most likely need to change. And that is often met with resistance, as you know, right? So it's not saying that what you guys are doing right now is bad. It's just saying that it needs to evolve if you want to get a different outcome, you know.
Yeah, what got you here won't get you there. And I think what we originally started this conversation out with is a lot of companies do live off of referrals and they live off of past jobs that they've done. And that's kind of how they get to a certain point. But it does start to kind of stop growing, actually. You kind of get to a point where you need to inject marketing and strategy and process to be able to get to the next stage. And it does require a new way of thinking.
It's very hard to scale. And the other thing for you guys to understand is with that emphasis around lifetime value for your customer, essentially what that will help you do is reduce your marketing costs. If you're booking 15% off your existing database, that means you're essentially having to spend 15% less on upfront lead acquisition. So there's method to the madness there in the space of, you know, like overall growth of the business. But you do need to have the data. You need to have the data. So, you know, you need to have the technology to plugged in place, and that's another uncomfortable thing for contractors. Like I'm terrible with technology. I'm terrible with the internet. It's like, okay, cool. But like,
it's getting easier with AI.
It'll
walk you through. You can tell it exactly what systems you're using, exactly what you're trying to figure out. It can walk you through step by step how to do it. You do have to follow the directions and know how to download stuff out of, say, your systems. But I've been doing this for our team, and I've found that like using our QuickBooks data, our CRM data, our, you know, Drive data, I'm starting to actually see the bigger picture. They didn't always talk. I was like, hey, we'll get some APIs eventually for this. But even just using ChatGPT to kind of walk me through some of this, I'm like, this isn't actually that hard. I think I just needed some instructions.
It's not that hard. It's just different, right? And again, like people ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't that whole mindset where like they've been doing something a certain way. We all do it. Change is uncomfortable. It is. But like the point is, if you want a different outcome, there are certain things you're going to have to do differently. And the other important thing, which is kind of where you guys come into play as a coaching business, is like inevitably you guys have to understand that at a certain point, and this can happen really, really, really quickly, you are going to have to take one hat off and put another one on. And I can tell you like that is often like a hard pill to swallow for a lot of business owners, because the hat they normally have to take off is the one where they're out on, you know, they're answering the phone, or they're, you know, doing their site out on site, or whatever it might be. It could be doing the work. Actually, it's very often actually doing the jobs, you know, like, oh no, I'm installing these. I'm still part of this bathroom renovation team. You know, it's like, you can't do that anymore. We need you to be going to these site visits. We need you closing jobs for this to grow. Otherwise you're not going to hit your KPI. You're not going to hit it. You know?
Yeah. I find a lot of people we meet, they know that they don't know how. And they're stuck in their habits, and they'll admit it or not, they're kind of comfortable in those habits, but they know they need to get off the tools. They just don't really know how. And because they don't know how, they just don't try and problem solve it.
I mean, it's not always even a case of getting off the tools, truthfully. It's just a case of like, you have to be, I mean, we had this conversation on the couch, like, you know, an hour ago, where we're talking about, okay, Danny was the marketing guy, and then he was this guy, and then he was that guy, and then he was this guy. Like, as a business director, you're always, your role and your where you're spending your attention is always changing. And like when you're coming into this model, like it's very often the case where your time has always been spent out there building. You've been doing the renovations yourself with your team or running the guys on site. But if you want to do this other, get to the next stage, chances are you're going to have to take that hat off for a while, and not take it off forever. You know, we have this conversation with clients all the time. They're like, but my time best spent is on site managing the guys. And I'm like, well, let's get you back there as quick as we can. Let's put some team into positions here that can do the other thing that we need so you can be back out there doing that.
Yeah, and I find that's, it's a nice idea. I do find it can be challenging if the owner is not a part of the larger vision of where things are going, right? And
well, that has to come from them, yeah, for sure. So, yeah.
Anyway, let's wrap this up. This is good. Lots of nuggets for today. If people want to learn more about you, connect with you, how do we find you?
Well, I'm pretty easy to find. The tradiewebguys.com.au is the agency. So I was mentioning before, we are in the process of putting a team on in North America to sort of better serve clients over here, which has been a constraint for us of in the past. So we're going to out to fix that. And then the SiteShed podcast. So if you guys that don't know, we haven't talked about that, but the SiteShed podcast is available anywhere. It's pretty well established, close to 500 episodes.
Just so everybody knows, Matt is the reason we run a podcast. Not the reason, but you were an influence on this podcast. You're an expert at what you do. How long have you been running that podcast now?
2016.
Okay. Yeah. So we're going almost on 10 years, pretty quick.
Yeah. And it was kind of like back in the day when no one really knew what a podcast was, myself included.
Totally.
Or, let alone who would listen to it.
Anyway, you do a phenomenal job with it. So if you enjoy listening to us, I would go check out Matt as well.
Thanks, buddy.
You were the inspiration for a lot of what we do here today.
Yeah, so. Awesome. Well, I love to see what you've done here. It's fantastic to see you guys, how you've grown the podcast. It's amazing.
We're just doing what we're talking about today. Just trying to bring out good brand presence, trying to make sure that people are aware who we are, bring out good information, and then, yeah, be sure. Known in the marketplace.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matt. Okay.
Ciao.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Contractor Evolution. If you've already subscribed to our podcast, consider sharing this episode with another contractor that you think needs to hear it.